Hey, this is Matthew Huff from BG Banter. Just as a disclaimer, this episode was recorded over 2 days due to the tornado warning in Iowa City on March 31st. So if you hear any differences in audio or volume, that's the reason why. Thanks again for tuning into new episodes of the show, and enjoy this episode covering John Wick Chapter 4 and Puss in Boots: The Last Wish. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of BG Banter. Joining here in the Zoom studio, we got Blake Kellinger.
Hey, guys.
And Caitlin Mass. And today on BG Banter, we're going to be talking about John Wick Chapter 4 and Puss in Boots: The Last Wish. These are two sequels that, spoiler alert, are very, very good. Either long-awaited, heavily anticipated, but are very, very satisfying films. And we're going to begin with John Wick Chapter 4, which is the fourth installment in the John Wick franchise, obviously following 1, 2, and 3, directed by Chad Stahelski. And it stars Keanu Reeves, Donnie Yen, Bill Skarsgård, Lawrence Fishburne, Hiroyuki Sanada, Shamir Anderson, Lance Reddick, rest in peace, Rina Sawayama, Scott Atkins, and Ian McShane. It's a big cast of characters. And from IMDb, this movie is about John Wick, and he uncovers a path to defeating the High Table. But before he can earn his freedom, he must face off against a new enemy and these powerful alliances across the globe, and what follows is nearly 3 hours of action, and just it never ever stops. What do we think about this film?
I mean, I think 3 hours of action is the best way to explain John Wick Chapter 4, but in the best way possible. I'm gonna be completely honest here. This is my favorite John Wick movie, but not only that, this might be my favorite action film. And I know that's definitely a very hot take, considering we have such great action films such as Mad Max Fury Road and Mad Max Fury Road, along with Ip Man, but with also Donnie Yen. But I absolutely love this movie. This movie completely surprised me, because after the last one, I was like, okay, how are they going to top this off? They're going to make more movies. I don't know. Maybe they should end it. At this point, I'm like, how can they top themselves without being too ridiculous, like the Fast and Furious saga? And somehow they pull that off with some of the best choreography and cinematography I've seen. And honestly, this movie has a better story this time around. And I felt like the emotion was there. And for a 3 hour long movie, the momentum never stopped. I felt like the pace was great, and it felt like a video game. And that was made me so happy. It's like, this is a video game come to life, but in the best way possible. There's even a scene that I'm not going to spoil it, but when you see it, you will get those video game vibes. And it's absolutely fantastic. I said so much about this film to my friends and family. It is literally one of my favorite films of the year. It is so spectacular.
Yeah. Caitlin, do you want to?
sure. Okay. Good film. Yeah. it's kind of funny how I got to like seeing it. It was just kind of like on a whim, right? And my friend was like, "Do you want to go?" And I was like, "Sure." I actually, I've never seen any of the other John Wick films. I wanted to see it because Rina Sawayama was in it. And also, I didn't even know Donnie Yen was in it until the film started. And I thought that was, like, a very, very nice surprise. But, like, in terms of, like, the two reasons I watched it, I thought Rina Sawayama was pretty good. And Donnie Yen was very good. And I was very happy to see both of them on screen. I think the whole film is really good, actually. The more I think about it, the more I like it, I think. It's like a film that like would be aimed towards me, but it didn't hit like it would. But I also think that it's just like very solid. I don't know. I don't really have much to say about it besides that. I would have to think a little bit more, but the choreography was extremely good. I'll say that. That was the best choreography I've probably seen in an American film, probably, from the top of my head, at least.
Yeah, so I have a very recent history with the John Wick franchise because I had never seen the films up until this month as the time we're recording this, because they were on my watch list for like years and years and years, and people were saying like, oh, Matthew, you gotta see John Wick. He would really like it. It's like nonstop action. It's a lot of fun. I guess to give a brief recap, I think the first film is okay. I'll be honest. It's not a bad film, but it is a bit more dated to the year it came out, no doubt being a very influential action film for the rest of the 2010s and onward. Two and three, I think, are better than the first one just because it excels at more of the action. The story is better. The choreography is better. It's like they improved everything. Not to say that the first product was bad, but they just said, let's just make this better. And they did. And they did the same thing with four, because this is easily, in my opinion, the best of the franchise. And it is a very, very impressive action film. I remember when the reviews were coming out for this, one critic said it was the best action film since Mad Max Fury Road. And while I don't think I prefer this to Mad Max Fury Road, nor do I think it's the best since, I personally think Top Gun Maverick is a better action film. But there are definitely moments that come very, very close to being as strong as Mad Max Fury Road in terms of spectacle, scale, pace, choreography, just everything. Like, so much action happens in this movie. The movie is 169 minutes long, but there's not one dull moment. Like, immediately from the start of the movie, you see John Wick punching this punching bag, and then the sound just amplifies throughout the theater. Just like, you know immediately what you're in for from that very moment, and it never lets off the gas. And I think that's what's so much fun about this movie. Story-wise, I do think it's not a bad story, but what I've learned about the John Wick franchise is that it's not that the stories are bad, but it's not, you don't go into John Wick, at least for me, for the story. The story merely exists for the action sequences to occur and just sort of to guide the character along this path. But at the same time, you do care about what's happening. Like, especially with the later films, it does add on more to the fact that like John Wick is nearly an indestructible like person, but like just the amount of stuff that he has to go through throughout this entire movie is just insane. And I just can't, I'm probably going to repeat myself a lot, but it literally just does not stop. Like, don't go to the bathroom when you watch this movie, like go before, because you don't want to leave your seat. There's so many action sequences that in any other movie would be like the peak, like especially in the opening scene in the hotel. For most action movies, that would probably be the best action scene, but that's the opening, and it gets better and better and better. So it's relentless. And I think more so than anything else, a movie like John Wick Chapter 4 proves that we need a best stunt coordination Oscar. Like, the stunt work is unreal. Like, seeing all these stunt actors, like, in a way, kind of like risking their lives, like just for the art basically, and doing all this very impressive choreography is just, it's what you want to see in an action film. And I really, really like how we're getting more like practical action now. I talked about that in the Top Gun Maverick episode, but yeah, it's just, this is what action movies are about. So I'm really, really glad I got to see this in the theater, and it's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, one thing I want to say too is, as I saw a recent study, before I say that, to your comment about stunt coordination for the Oscars, Chad Stahelski, the director of this movie, has spoke about how he wants stunt coordinators to be recognized in the Oscars. He talked about how, like you said, Matthew, they're risking their lives for the art. And I think they definitely deserve credit where credit's due, because this movie, there's a lot of stuff, like the stunt work is just the things they go through, this, especially an action scene with the staircase. When you see it, you'll know exactly what I'm saying, because that scene to me is like, how did they do that? But I saw a study, they did some research, and Keanu Reeves' character, John Wick, only said 380 words in a 3-hour long movie.
I believe that.
And as more, so from the first movie to the fourth movie, the amount of words that he says has decreased slowly but surely. And I love that it actually provides a lot of character growth in John Wick as he gets more angrier, more angry, more annoyed of being part of this world again. And it's just so, it's so smart. It's actually really great character growth. Even when you don't think John Wick really changes the character, it's as he gets more annoyed, he speaks very less. And I love that little tidbit. And another thing I really want to add is the world. No one's really coming in for the story. It's the world. Mm-hmm. The lore of this world is so brilliant. It's nothing like you've seen in a lot of films. And so I rewatched the first three movies with my girlfriend. She has never seen these movies before. So as each movie progressed, we started noticing the different world building going on. And she starts seeing like the way that the world is introduced. Before we saw the fourth film, she loved the second film just because of how rich this world was, especially like going to the Rome section and seeing like how everything works. So by the time we got to the fourth film, she became very familiarized with this world, and then seeing how everything folds. There's still so much richness of this world. And you're not coming into the John Wick movies for like story, because story isn't necessarily the main thing here. It's really what's being introduced in the world. And that's why you're so sucked into this world. You're so sucked into this universe because it's fascinating. You don't really know much about it, but you're seeing it. They're not explaining it to you. They're just saying, oh, this is what happened. So some people might look at it as like, oh, that's just like a plot device or plot armor. But there's also elements where it's like, oh, but that feels right. That feels like it's part of that world. It seems like, oh, this would actually exist. So I appreciated that element a lot. And the fourth film really expanded onto that. Like, and that's the thing I love about this film. Like, you would think the fourth film will just be tiresome by the fourth entry. No, not at all. In fact, it just elevated to the top. And I think that's why I appreciate it. Oh, I want to mention Bill Skarsgård might be one of my favorite John Wick villains.
Oh, he's great. And yeah.
Like that. And oh gosh, I cannot remember the villain's name from the second film. I think it was D'Antonio. D'Antonio. Mm-hmm. He was the villain in the second film. He was great. I love him in that one. But I think Bill Skarsgård and D'Antonio are like on par with each other as my favorite John Wick villains. They are so terrific, and I absolutely love how slimy they were. They were just, they made me hate them, and I absolutely love it.
Yeah, I think you touched upon something really interesting about John Wick as a franchise, and it you were going on about the world building, and I definitely agree, because it's not each sequel, I feel like. And some people actually have this critique of at least four that I've read, is that some people feel like the story is really, really weak considering it's also the longest. Because like two and three, I almost consider three a bit of a chase film in a way, because he's basically on the run from all these assassins. It's an open contract, so his life is on the line at any given turn. But to me, it's kind of like, that's kind of how I feel about like Mad Max Fury Road. It's like the story is just the chase. They have to go from one place to get gas, and they got to go back. That's the plot. That's all you need. And it's like, that just is that drives you through the story. But I think with John Wick is that like each film establishes more about this underground society. And I think what helps is that unlike the other films, four really has a more interpersonal connection between John Wick and other characters, especially with Donnie Yen, for example, they have like this history together, and it is well established. And even though they don't reveal like everything, based on like how they interact with each other and how they in a way like just talk to their emotions, how they play off each other, there's history between the two of them. Like, it goes back like way before. And that's really nice. It doesn't have to be spelled out for you. And because of that, you automatically get invested more into the action sequences. If John Wick didn't have a story, then what's the point of watching the action? It's because you're emotionally invested in some way. You don't have to love the story. You don't have to admit that it's a great story, but it's investment. And that's what's important. It's not like Fast and Furious, where it just feels like, and I'm not trying to crap all over Fast and Furious. There's some fun moments, no doubt, but there's moments in there where it just seems like we don't care about the story. We're just going to show you the cool stunts, and it's just going to be ridiculous, and there's no tone. And in John Wick 4, there are moments that are surprisingly funny. Like, there's one moment on the stair sequence that's like so over the top and so, and he's like, he should have been dead by now. But it's like it's entertaining. Yeah, like there's so every one of these action scenes, like I was literally smiling like so wide, because it's just like, it's so much fun. It's so entertaining to see this. It's I think you compared it to a video game at one point, just like how much action is happening. So yeah, it's just it's relentless. And I know I'm kind of repeating myself, but it's just like, I don't know, it's best to like kind of talk about just like individual scenes in this movie. Like so we got like the hotel scene in the beginning.
Yeah. And you know what? I think this movie needed to be long. And I think when it comes to action sequences, here's my thing about the third film, which I still think it's great. I don't think there's a John Wick movie where I didn't like or love. I love all of these films. But I think the reason I consider the third one as one of my least favorites is because when I think of the open contract, like everyone's going to town, like everyone's going after John Wick, I felt like it was, that element was sort of missing the third one, just a little bit. I don't know why. I was expecting more. So seeing John Wick Chapter 4 with the whole Paris segment where everyone is like walking out, and it became a warfare, like especially in the one of the statues. Oh gosh, like that to me was what I wanted to see in Chapter 3, and we got it in Chapter 4, where it's like it just became all-out warfare, like not just a empty warehouse. Like this is like they're literally in the middle of downtown, but that's because they have a bigger budget. They have a budget of $100 million.
Yeah, so this is actually, and you can tell.
Yeah, and you can tell that you can tell where the money went, and that's actually amazing. Even like the John Wick film, the first one started off with $20 million.
Yeah, it was pretty modest.
40, and then 60, and now we're at 100. So I do respect how they carefully use their money in order to in pursuit of the art, and you can see that. And I think that what makes me really appreciative of this movie. Like, it's amazing. And also, I want to mention Donnie Yen is fantastic in this movie. And yes, he plays another blind character, but he's amazing as this blind character. Like, if you guys don't know what I'm referencing to, from Rogue One, Star Wars story, he played as a blind guy. He was awesome.
Yeah,
something about Donnie Yen being blind is just awesome, apparently. But I love how they created Donnie Yen's character, like the way that he utilizes his environment. And I love how he doesn't always get the person. Like, he sometimes has to like try to see, and he's, you know, he may have great hearing, but he struggles.
There's imperfections in his choreography, intentionally though.
Exactly. And that's something that what I love about these films, imperfections. Like, you have in the second film, you have a deaf girl fighting John Wick, and then you see a blind guy fighting John Wick, and he's like levels to John Wick, and it's so surprising, but it's awesome. So I love the imperfections in the choreography because it makes it feel real and more tense, and that's something I really appreciate about the choreography.
There's moments where John Wick, like, obviously even when he struggles, like he still like gets back up. There's the whole thing about like plot armor, but for most of the time, like in most action films, like there's not really they don't really externalize the struggles and just like exhaustion that they have to go to when fighting, like when they stumble or they like miss a shot or whatever. Like that's really important. And I remember reading somewhere, at least with the first John Wick, like there is a lot of people who have like trained with like guns, cite John Wick as being one of the most like accurate in terms of like how the gunplay is used and how the choreography is done. And you can tell because everything looks like so precise, and it was directed by Chad Stahelski and David Leitch, I think, was a co-director. Yes. Like, they're both stunt coordinators. They've done stunt work on like countless Hollywood productions, so they know what they're doing. And I think that's really important. And I do like how, because of that added budget, they are able to shoot like in real world locations. Like, most of this movie takes place in Paris, and there's some shots, like I think the only shot that or sequence that you could tell wasn't shot in Paris, probably it was when they're the card scene, not inside, but outside. There's like of the Eiffel Tower. It looks like the LED screen that they used in The Mandalorian, unless maybe just the way it was shot. It didn't really look that convincing, but other than that, you can tell it's like when they're doing the traffic circle, it's the Arc de Triomphe, I think is what it's called. Yes. You can tell they shot there. And that scene goes on for like 15 minutes. It like never ever stops. It's just like, oh my gosh, like, is this just going to keep going? Like, I almost thought like, is this just the rest of the movie? Is it just going to be here? And I would have been fine with that, but no, it goes into that 1 billion. I think we could talk about this because by the time we're uploading this, the movie will be out for a bit. We're not going to give away the ending, but in one of the abandoned buildings, John Wick has like this, basically like, it's called like Dragon's Breath. It's this like shotgun that shoots out fireworks pretty much.
That's my favorite scene. Oh my God. The bird's eye view.
Yeah. And then
the bird's eye view. That's why I mentioned about the video game segment.
Yeah. The camera pans up to like an overhead shot as if you're playing like an old PS, like a PS2 shooter. And it just goes around. It's all in one take too. All of these stunt extras, like, basically getting their butts kicked, and it's just all done continuously. It's just like, that is so much work to do. Like, if they mess up, they have to restart all of that. And it's like, you could tell there's some practical effects too. So it's just like, I admire how in this, more so than any of the other John Wick films, this one, it really seemed like they went above and beyond with how they shot the action.
Yes.
And not to say that the other films were shot badly, but it's like, it's a lot of the same. It's like, okay, we're going to shoot it in like kind of one long take, but we're not going to be super, super creative with the camera work. But this one, it's like, it's noticeably better, better shot. Like, I don't know if this will get a best cinematography nomination. It would be awesome if it did, because the John Wick franchise has not been recognized for any Oscars, which is a shame. But yeah, like cinematography, editing, production design, stunt work. It's like, it's amazing. Even the sound mixing too. I briefly mentioned this in the beginning, but one of the first shots is John Wick punching like a punching bag, and we saw this at Film Scene in Iowa City, and the sound mixing is insane there, because when that impact hits, it like echoes all throughout the theater, and it like kind of startled me. I'm just like, that's some good mixing right there. So
no, and I love that mixing. I think like you mentioned before with sounds, I want to see the timeline to this movie. I want to see how the timeline for the sounds, the editing, how they crafted that. Cause that is so, like, think about like the punches, the gunshots, the car chase sequences, footsteps. Like, it's still so impressive to me. And also another character I want to mention we haven't talked about was Tracker. I really like Tracker a lot. I thought his dog, wow, that dog kicked some butt, man. Like, I was sitting there like, man, this dog is much more aggressive than the last dogs in the third film. But man, they were awesome. He was awesome. Like, that dog was great. I thought Tracker was cool too. Mm-hmm. Granted, there were moments where it could have fallen to like, of course he's not going to kill John Wick, or he's going to wave. And because there's something that they did with the character that seems like plot armor, but it makes sense for his character. So when you watch it, you'll see it. But I thought they actually handled it pretty well. I really like that guy a lot. So yeah, but I have a lot to say, but I want to have everyone else speak their mind. So
yeah, all the other, like, I also really like Bill Skarsgård in this. He's probably my favorite John Wick antagonist so far, mostly because Bill Skarsgård is a very he's an actor that has a presence. Like, when you see him, like, you just know he embodies the character mostly just in his appearance. That's why he's so great as Pennywise in It. But like, even though he doesn't really do a lot of the fighting necessarily, he's basically the one in control, and I think that's what's important about his character, unlike the other John Wick villains, is that he's smart. He knows how to plan. And seeing that, even though he's like basically surveying all of that, you sense that he's there even in all the action sequences.
Yes.
But yeah, it expands. It sounds like I'm all over the place, but it's one of those those movies where it's just like, you have to talk about moments and like,
like
just reflect, like, where do you start?
Yeah. Oh, I do know where to start. So funny enough, we were earlier before this call, we were talking about the SpongeBob movie, and I just realized that Clancy Brown, the voice of Mr. Krabs, was in the
movie. Oh yeah, he's in it.
Yeah, he's the he's like the side man. I can't remember his position, but he was in the, next.
He was like an operative of the high tide.
Operative, yes.
Or high table. And why did I say high tide? Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was
what the heck? That's so cool.
Yeah. No, I forgot that he was in the movie. So when that happened, I was like, oh my God, that's right. That's Clancy Brown. Oh, he was great. I love his voice. And like once I heard the voice, I'm like, Mr. Krabs. But I don't know. I thought everyone has great moments. And of course, Lawrence Fishburne in the movie was great. I love him. Ian McShane, he's awesome.
McShane, I like him a lot in these movies.
Like, I feel like no matter what movies in, even Pirates of the Caribbean 4, he was great. Like, I can't think of a movie where I don't like Ian McShane. He just does such a great job. I love his presence. I just love his relationship with John Wick. Gosh, Lance Reddick, rest in peace.
What a
terrific actor.
I do wish he was in this movie a bit more, though.
Yes.
He was unfortunately not in it for a whole lot.
But I kind of wish he had more screen time, but he's still great. I love him as his character. I'm just trying to think, because like you said, Matthew, it's kind of hard to...
Oh, we didn't talk about the club scene in Berlin.
Yes. Oh, my. Oh, Scott Adkins.
Yeah, with Scott Adkins.
Yes. Okay. Can I just say, I love the fact they put him in the fat suit. I just think that was such a creative decision. Because during this movie, when he was like kicking John Wick's butt like all over the place, I was like, okay, don't judge a book by its cover. Because he literally like the way that he like fought him, I'm like, that's Scott Adkins, guys. And honestly, he's a terrific actor too.
Yeah, like, he's good.
Yeah, he kind of reminded me of Kingpin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also I love how these movies do such a good job with like, I guess, showing tone and emotions like through very subtle moments. Like the whole scene when they're playing poker, basically at that table, is very, very tense, and then it excels into the big bombastic action scene, which like I find it really funny. It's not really a flaw, but something I found very amusing was the fact that they're fighting in this club, and it's like in this desolate warehouse. There's strobe lights going. There's dancers everywhere, but when they're fighting in the middle of the crowd, all the dancers keep dancing. Like they just can't be bothered that there's people having this knife fight. And there's like, oh, okay. Anyway, like no one reacts. I was just like, that's interesting.
Yeah, I saw a theory about that, and they said that because like mainly everyone is part of this world. They're very like familiar with this world, so that when people do get killed or they die or like there's a fight happening around them, they're like, that's a typical Tuesday. Like like, and I honestly am gonna, I kept that theory in mind just watching this, because I noticed that in the second and third film, and as movies continue on, it's like, okay, they're just used to this. They're used to this, like, you know, people getting flipped all over the place, left or right. Like, imagine you're at a club, you're dancing, you know, you're having fun. All of a sudden, you see someone get thrown to the side, and then people, like, just an ultimate shootout, and you're just still dancing. You're like, hey, this is cool. This is a vibey place. I love it. Like, that just adds to the richness of the world, and I think that they did that on purpose for that reason. But that's why I love it's the small details that really works, and that's why I think the John Wick world is so amazing. That's why I'm so excited for the Continental show.
Yeah, the Continental show, and they're also doing a spinoff called Ballerina with Ana de Armas,
yes,
who plays the character from the third film. And they're also doing a fifth film as well, which I don't want to get into the ending of this movie, but it leaves it in a spot where I'm honestly not sure how they can do a fifth one. So I would, don't get me wrong, I would love to see more John Wick films, because if this, now I get the hype, now I understand, but I just don't know how they're going to do it though, at where the story leaves off.
See, I wish we have time for a spoiler discussion. I really wish, because I have theories as to about, you know, the film. I'm not going to get into it, but I was thinking a lot long and hard because I remember hearing they announced a chapter 5, and then Chad Stahinski came out saying, oh, chapter 4, we want to take time, you know, time to rest, you know. And I'm like yeah, because, you know, how can you can't keep cooking that like right away. You gotta give it time to cook. So if they do make a fifth film, I will love that, but mm-hmm. it really depends on how they're gonna approach it. So now I'm very curious what's gonna happen next. But overall, I absolutely love this film. Like, I feel like I just want to be so specific about things that happen in this movie, because it's like, oh, it's so good, man. I don't know what else to say. It's just so good.
It's one of those films too where I think it's better if you just experience it, especially because it's so heavy on action. It's like it's hard to put visual action scenes like into words, into like just conversations like this. So honestly, it's better if you would like to go check it out and just get invested and get immersed into this world. Caitlin, do you have anything else to?
Yeah, I have a question.
Yeah.
If you were to pick, what would you say was your more favorite part of the movie? The first half or the second half?
Ooh.
Ooh.
I'd say the first half for me.
Really? Okay, I would say the second half. Because I've noticed that's how the pacing of John Wick films usually are. Like they sprinkle the action in the first half and combine it with the story, which is great. But then the second half just like goes all in, it just like does not stop at all. And I was just like, I don't know, that last hour of John Wick 4 is some of the most fun I've had watching a movie in the theater in like in a while, like post pandemic. Like it was up there with like Everything Ever All at Once and Top Gun Maverick, just because it was just so entertaining. Just like, this reminds me of why action films are great to see with a crowd. Because see, I saw this opening weekend and the crowd was loving it. Like there was a group of people behind me that were laughing, like not at it, but laughing because they were having so much fun during those scenes. So I would have to say the second half, although the first half is just as strong. So
yeah,
actually, now that I'm thinking about it, maybe I do like the second half more. I just like when I think of that film, I do think of like the first half. But yeah, the second half is so good, especially like the staircase, like action scenes. That was very, very impressive, I think.
Yeah. Gosh, it's like the car chase too. When not in the circle, but when he's driving the car too.
Yeah, with no doors.
There's no doors.
In no windshield, he's just driving literally a box.
Yeah. Yeah, in any other movie it would be seen as comedic, but I don't know. There's something about the way these movies do it where it's just like you buy it. You just immediately buy it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I would say we're about out of time on John Wick 4, unfortunately. So what are our final thoughts? It seems like we all like it a lot.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to say this. This is an easy 10 out of 10 movie for me. I know that's very high, I know, but I cannot think of any negatives or any flaws that like deteriorates my outlook on this film. This is literally one of my favorite films of the year. This is a movie I recommend seeing this in the theater. Is fantastic. So yeah, 10 out of 10.
Great film. It's basically everything I want in a film. I mean, not everything, but like most things, like the choreography is just incredible. I guess I'd say it's almost everything I want out of an action film, I think. Not much else to say. 8 or 9 out of 10 for me.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's a great, fun ride. Easily my favorite of the John Wick franchise, and I think this is an action film that should be looked at as like almost like a textbook example of how to do like these one-on-one fight choreographies, like hand-to-hand combat, gunplay, car chases, all that. It has a lot of stuff going on. Not only is it a sequel that somehow manages to one-up even like the past predecessor that was also great, but it continues the lore, develops more of the character, and just improves upon everything. It's like every single movie improves upon the, not even the flaws, but just making things better. It's like they care about these sequels. It's not just to make money, but it's because they want to actually improve it. They want to continue the story. And that's what I love about the sequel so much. So yeah, I highly, highly recommend checking out this movie if you would like to. It'll probably still be playing at Film Scene at the Chauncey by the time we upload this. So yeah, it's great. I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10. It's pretty early in the year, but it is my favorite film of the year so far. I don't know if I'll be honest. I don't think that it will be at my number one by the end of December, but I really, really liked it. So yeah.
2023, man. We're not ready. We're not ready.
Oh, for yeah. 2023. Yeah. We're only just getting started with 2023.
And if this is how we start, I'm so excited for what comes next.
Yeah. Now we're going to move on from John Wick Chapter 4, a sequel, to another sequel called Puss in Boots: The Last Wish. This film came out a few months ago and is now streaming on Peacock. And it is a sequel to the 2011 film Puss in Boots, which was also a spinoff of the Shrek franchise. So this is technically the sixth Shrek film, I guess. Yes, it's the sixth installment in the Shrek franchise. And it was directed by Joel Crawford, and it stars Antonio Banderas, Salma Hayek, Harvey Guillen, Florence Pugh, Olivia Colman, Ray Winstone, Samson Caio, John Mulaney, Wagner Moura, Divine Joy Randolph, and Anthony Mendez. And the plot of this movie from IMDb, Puss in Boots discovers that his passion for adventure has taken its toll, and he's lost 8 of his 9 lives. So he goes on this journey to restore them by finding this mythical wishing star that will grant him all his wishes. And he's dealing with basically mortality. And yeah, this is kind of like John Wick 4. I don't know where to start with this movie because it is excellent. What did we think?
Peak cinema.
Peak cinema.
I'm not going to lie. When I first saw the reviews for this film, like it was at 96% Rotten Tomatoes, I was like, no way. No way. I saw the trailers. I was like, okay, this is interesting. A different animation, like a Spider-Verse. But watching this movie, I don't think I was ready for what I was about to watch, because this movie is not only funny, but super mature, super dark, like super like comforting with its themes. And most of all, it felt like a Shrek movie. Like this reminded me of the good old Shrek 1 and 2. Like the humor of like, and that's something I want to get into later about the humor of the Shrek franchise. This felt like a reinvention to the franchise. And I think that's what Puss in Boots like set up for Shrek. And you know what? That's what they need. If they want to make more Shrek films, this is the movie that they need to start off with, because this felt like the reinvention that needed it. And it felt like brand new life to the Shrek universe. So I absolutely love this film. Like this is seriously the biggest surprises of 2022. And I think it shows that DreamWorks Animation has really took a lot of like, you know, a lot of thoughts, a lot of like opinions for people, and really pushed the animation. Also, fun fact, the director of this movie directed the second film of The Croods. And to me, I feel like Croods 2 was a bit better than the first Croods, even though I love the first Croods movie. So the director is very talented, and I think this is top tier. This is a top tier movie. The animation. Let's just talk about the animation. Yeah, what did you guys think of the animation?
Oh, the animation is stunning. It's clearly inspired by Spider-Verse, which is not a bad thing because Spider-Verse's animation is some of the best I've ever seen. But this one, even though the first film didn't have the style, it feels so appropriate for this film because they use it in interesting ways. Even with like the action sequences too, sometimes the animation, like the frame rate changes, but it's because it's going for a very stylized look, or with like how they use colors, the angles that they get to. It's just, I don't know, there's very few films that I remember when I saw the trailer for this, and I guess this will be the bleed over into my thoughts on this film. I guess I should, before I go on the animation, let me just start at the beginning. Shrek as a franchise, I'll be honest, I've never really been a huge fan of Shrek. I think it's an important film. I very much acknowledge its importance, but I didn't grow up with it. I don't find it very funny, honestly. Unfortunately, I just find the movie really boring, to tell you the truth. I like Shrek 2 more. Shrek 3 is garbage. I never even bothered seeing Shrek 4. Puss in Boots 1 is okay. I saw it as a kid, but I don't remember much about it. And I didn't rewatch it before seeing this initially. But yeah, similar to you, Blake, when I saw the trailers for this, I was just like, okay, this looks fun. I really like how the animation style is like, yeah, Antonio Banderas coming back. You got Salma Hayek coming back. Like, I liked them in the first one. And it has a really good supporting cast, too. And then when I saw the reviews, I'm just like, this is getting like Pixar levels of high critical reception. Like, this is, I think it's the same score as like Lego Movie or something, which is one of my favorite animated films ever. So I'm just like, okay, I need to see this now. And when I saw it, I was very, very impressed because I had next to no expectations for a Puss in Boots sequel, but I don't know what DreamWorks did or what the filmmakers did, but really just seemed like they were like, hey, we have this sequel to Puss in Boots. Do whatever you can to make it like such a good story. And like, just, it's amazing because I feel like with animated films, there's this mentality where it's like, we need to please masses, which is true because animation films are technically family, but this movie has a very mature storyline regarding mortality, regarding like existentialism too. It's just like, these are themes and ideas that aren't often explored in children's animation, but are done in a way where I not only think kids can understand it, but it allows older audiences to get invested into what's happening, especially with how dark the movie can get. Like the central theme of this movie is death in and of itself. And having that being manifested with the wolf character makes for a very, very intimidating antagonist. He's by far and away my favorite part of this movie. I just want to, wolf slash death is probably my favorite animated villain in like, I don't even know how long, just because of how intimidating he is, how suave he is too. It's like, it's a very different approach to this story because in the first film, it just seemed like that movie was made because, oh, Puss in Boots is a popular character. Let's make some quick cash. And yeah, and it was fine. It wasn't like harmless, but it seemed like this one, they really, really cared and tried about the characters, about the story, about the themes. And that's so refreshing to see in an animated film, just because it seems like it's become more corporate. Like I will never not stop loving Pixar, but there's definitely some movies where you could tell it's just like, yeah, they didn't really care as much on the story. It just seemed like they just need to get it out because it's in their contract. But this one, it's like, no money. Money's not the concern. Let's make a good movie. And they did. And you know, it's a great one too.
Oh yeah.
I was going to say, so I feel like the stakes with the film are very real because like, you know that, like, there's like two factors to it. Like, normally when people think about like stakes in the film, they think about, oh, is the main character going to be able to do this? Or is the main character going to die? But there's another factor in the film, which is that like, oh, will Puss in Boots get his lives back or will he not? And it's like a very real concern. And you wonder how like things are going to like tie back up in the end when like, I'm not going to spoil it at all, but just how they tie things up. It's, you can't really predict it, but you also kind of can, but the stakes are still very real. And especially with that very intimidating antagonist, I think it's very rewarding.
It also is just more so than the first one too. It's really, really funny. Like, I don't remember the jokes in the first one at all.
It's literally hilarious. Like, yeah, there's like so many iconic moments in that film. And I was just like, some of the jokes in the second Puss in Boots, I was just absolutely not expecting whatsoever.
Like, there's
the dog.
Oh, the dog.
The dog. I was afraid he was going to annoy me, but he surprised me. Also, the wolf. Best DreamWorks villain I've seen in some time. I'm just going to say that. But that was a side note. But the dog, the things that he says in this movie caught me so off guard. I sat there. I saw this with my roommate. And we were watching this. And as we were watching it, I looked over to him. I'm like, this, did they just do that? Did they really just say that? Like, did they just allude to that? Because that to me is like on the same level to the Shrek 2 police chase scene.
Yeah.
That where the pepper spray and the white Bronco, so funny. And the reason I'm laughing so much because it's just reflecting on that. Because that's why I mentioned earlier, this movie makes me reflect to Shrek 2. And that's what it needs. It felt like that classic crude humor Shrek, But it felt like the stake, like what you and Kayla were saying, there's stakes to this movie. Like, mm-hmm. even if it's like quote unquote predictable, there is something so reinvigorating onto mm-hmm. this whole entire film. And that's the thing that I feel like you made a great point about Pixar. Like Pixar, as of recently, they try to make mature stories. Like Turning Red, I thought was not bad.
I really like Turning Red.
Yeah, I like Turning Red too. I love it though. I try to love it, but I couldn't love it because I felt like they were struggling with trying to tie in the themes of, you know, maturity and all that, but they, you know, stumbled a little bit and they made it a little too on the nose. This movie felt like they had that right balance of when to be a bit on the nose and when to be subtle, and it was like literally perfect on the line. Like the death, the whole idea of death. And I don't think I've ever seen that in a kid's film. And it's shocking and so well done. I don't think I've ever been, you know, got chills thinking about the wolf character, because his whistle too.
Yeah.
I want to make that my ringtone. Like, it's just so good. It's so, so good. But yeah,
I think with the Wishing Star too, it is certainly a MacGuffin, because that's the whole point of why the character is going on this journey. But it also gives them, because there's three groups of characters basically. We have Puss, Kitty Softpaws, and Perito the dog. Then we have Goldilocks and the Three Bears as like this crime family with that was a Florence Pugh's character. And then we also have Great. Big Jack Horner as well, who's the other antagonist. So it's like all
Big
these
Jack
played by John Mulaney. All these three characters want that wishing star. But it's for different reasons, and like it's very believable too. Like, you understand why Puss wants to get the wishing star, and it's not because like they also explore like his like sort of like his arrogance, and also the fact that the opening scene, like, it shows him being like this great hero, but it also shows like, oh yeah, he's a bit narcissistic, he's a bit self-centered too. But it's because he has one more life left. Like, he still wants to be known as like this great Avenger. He doesn't want to like die. And like, I especially was surprised with how Goldilocks' character was handled, because in the advertising, they made her just seem like she was going to be, oh yeah, just another villain. And like, that was really it. But like, you see like, oh, she wants the wishing star because she wants to like have, I guess, this new life, because she's grown up with the Three Bears, which was, I believe that was Olivia Colman and Ray Winstone, our Mama Bear and Papa Bear, who do a great job. But it's like, there's that one scene when they're in the forest, and then the wishing star basically brings back these memories essentially. And they go to the memory of like their house pretty much, and Goldilocks being in there and like discovering herself as a young child and what she really wants. I think that was, those little moments are handled very, very well. It reminded me of like really early Pixar films, like kind of like Finding Nemo or Monsters, Inc. in a way. And then you get Big Jack Horner, who basically just wants control. Even though he's a great villain, he's probably the most one-dimensional in a way, just because he just wants power pretty much. But he's funny, and so I don't really care. He also has the conscience, the Jiminy Cricket like parody dude.
Who that was just, so funny. Yeah, so like, I was not ready for that.
There's so many. This movie has so many like ways of how it approaches humor. Like, they do like self-referential humor to like fairy tales, which is very much similar to the first Shrek or the Shrek movies. And then you have stuff where it's more modern to sensibilities, like with Perito. Like, there's a scene where they literally put censor bleeps in it. And I'm just like, that's very much in tune with like our modern sense of humor. And it works in this movie. And I don't think it'll really become dated, because that's just something that's been around for like years. And it's funny though, because it's like, oh, you can just imagine your head what he's saying. And it was funnier too, because when I rewatched this movie, I rewatched it on Peacock and I had the subtitles on. And reading the dialogue too, when they have the center, he's like, oh, okay, you really know what he's actually saying then. So it's great. Yeah.
No, one thing I love about the writing of this film is that with the villains, they had three separate villains. A villain that finds their path like by the end, like kind of like reflect on their actions a little bit, like their main goals. And that was Goldilocks' character, like like you see, you know, their her past and like what she really wants. And then you get, you know, Death as this very intimidating, scary villain. And then you have the one-dimensional, this straight up, oh, funny villain character, and that was Big Jack. And so the fact that you get three separate villains, but they balance each other so well. So when we go back to these characters, by the way, Death only has like 5 minutes of screen time.
Which is shocking. Yeah.
Which is shocking, but he's the most memorable character. But here's the thing, for 5 minutes of screen time, I didn't feel like, oh, he needs to be in the movie more. It was the perfect amount. Like, he was scary for what he was. I actually rewatched it on Peacock, and there was a lot, like, there is a lot of, like, background in it. Like, you see him lurking, and I did not notice that. There was actually some moments where I'm like, he's right there. Oh, my God. Like, they did such a great job, like, making his presence known, and he, like, knows, like, when to come in, and I love that. It was so smart. It's very smart play of the characters, and, oh, one thing I want to mention is the map. The map was so creative.
Yeah.
And I love how they utilize that. Like, that was, like, and it just not only creates a great humor, but also revealed more characters. So there's actually deeper character motivations, and you see that. And the map is supposed to challenge their beliefs. And that was so creative. And it makes the map so much fun. It makes the journey more inventive. It's like, how can they top this off? And they do. And they actually make some really intense sequences, actually. Like, can I say there's actually a body count in this movie? It's just, it's shocking. I was like, this is a PG movie and people are getting blown up. Oh my God. Like, it's crazy.
Well, there's also just moments that are like legitimately eerie. Like, nothing, there's no like jump scares in this movie, but it's just like the visual presence of Death. I know we keep going back to Death just because he just has such a great presence in this movie that ultimately sticks with you. Like the whole scene when Puss is in like that ice cave trying to get the map, and he sees like the reflections of all his previous eight lives, and then Death just comes in just to be like, yeah, I've been watching over you, and he's like, you didn't value any of your lives. Like, that's when he realizes just like, okay, I've wasted basically my life, and now this is my only chance to live, but like I can't escape Death. And I think that's also really, in a way, it's just like, yeah, unfortunately for all of us, like Death is inevitable. Like, how we don't get a second chance. It's like almost like live your life to the fullest in a way. But the way the movie explores it, I don't think would necessarily alienate children too, just because sorry about that. There was some sirens going off. It is easy to grasp as a kid. When you're watching this, it's like, because they could also be like, okay, he wants Puss, basically that's his motivation, but there's deeper meanings to it. And I just really love how they actually made Death a physical character, because he's the manifestation of just really Puss's biggest fear, and in a way almost everyone's fear, just like, yeah, Death is gonna happen. So it's like, what do you do when he's actually real and in front of you? How do you fight off that? Like, you can't defeat Death. So
no, I think that was such a bold, very fierce, yet there's something comforting about the theme of death and mortality. And the fact that this is made for not just kids, but for families, it's amazing. Because honestly, this is a lesson. I love when movies, like kid movies, like, I don't want to say kid movies, like anime movies, focus on these mature themes and to show like families these themes, but it doesn't feel inappropriate or feels like they're trying to please a certain demographic or anything. They're trying to tell a story and trying to share the themes, because honestly, these themes should be taught to kids. These are themes that need to be taught. And honestly, what I'm so happy about is that the script is not only funny and great and so filled with character, but it ties into the theme so well. And there's so many different elements to this theme of friendship, teamwork, death, mortality, being grateful for what you have. And it's just beautiful. And there was a moment in this movie where I teared up. It was a very tough scene. I don't know if I want to talk about it because it's like a mild spoiler, but there's all I'll say is there's a panic attack scene, and that scene that made me tear up. It just, there are some moments of true real emotion that what Kayla mentioned before, like the stakes are so high. Like even if you think you know what's gonna happen, it's not the most unpredictable movie in the world, but it's still like, man, this is bold.
Yeah, I do. If I did have to look at flaws of this movie, because I'll be honest, as great as this movie is, this was not my favorite animated film of this year. I personally preferred Marcel the Shell and Del Toro's Pinocchio over this. Yeah. I think you touched on the fact that the story is very good, but I think it's one of those movies where the themes and how it approaches emotion is stronger than the actual like plot itself, because it is kind of like a journey movie, and there's some moments that are predictable. It's not a predictable movie though. Like, especially with the end, like once they get to the wishing star, then you kind of know what's going to happen by that point. It doesn't ruin the movie for me, just because the way it handles the emotions is just so good in the first place. But yeah, so I would say it unfortunately does kind of fall back into the more conventional tropes of like family films, but it's not a bad thing. It's not a bad story. So, but we didn't really talk about kind of like going back to John Wick, the action sequences in this movie. Very impressive. Very impressive in terms of the artistry. I love, love, love the opening 10 minutes of this movie with Puss fighting like that giant with the bell. And just
so beautiful.
It's gorgeous. Like the way it's paced, the way it shows just like speed and timing too. But it also works for the story, because this is showing Puss in his glory days, like without having to worry about death, without having to worry about like mortality or anything, just like he's living his life and he's having so much fun with it. But like there's one shot.
Oh,
I really wish these action scenes are so good. And I really wish people would stop putting them in 60 FPS.
There's one shot in the movie that how do I even describe it? It's when Puss grabs the bell and like wraps it around the giant, and it's as if this were a live action film, the camera is on the bell and it like circles around, and it's just like, that is so creative to see in animation, just because in animation they don't really frame it in ways where you'd be like, okay, if this were a live action film, where would the camera be? But this one takes it in a way where it's like, it's framed purposefully and interestingly to give you angles. I'm just like, wow, it's crazy to see this in was basically hand drawn, or like I guess computer drawn. So it's just really, really creative stuff.
Yeah, Matthew, I think we can all agree here that DreamWorks Animation decided to try to make a anime style fight. Make an anime movie. And honestly, there are some moments here where it did feel anime inspired, like especially with there was literally a Naruto run.
I noticed that too.
And it was great when I saw that. I was in the trailer, and then watching the movie, I'm like, this is awesome. I love it. And I just love the anime inspirations. Can I just say, lately in Hollywood, they've been taking a lot of anime inspirations and putting in the movies, and it's just been so great. Like, I just love that, and I think it just adds so much flair and so much liveliness to the fight scenes, because like you mentioned before, the framing in this movie is so beautiful. Like, it makes the action scenes so intense. It feels different. And I love that. You need to spice up action in an anime movie, and that's what I'm seeing. And that's something that makes me excited to see where DreamWorks is going. It's like, where they're going to go next. And with their next upcoming projects, there's a new Ruby Kraken movie. They're making a Kraken movie where the mermaids are villains, and they're making another Trolls movie, but this one actually looks pretty decent. So it seems like DreamWorks is really, this Puss in Boots 2 feels like a reinvention to their studio. And it seems like they want to find different routes of how they want to approach this. And that's what I'm seeing here. And it makes me so happy to say that I feel like DreamWorks is really coming back to their own and really getting their feet up. Like, Bad Guys is great earlier.
Oh, yeah, I like the Bad Guys.
Oh, I like the Bad Guys too. It wasn't a great story, but I still love the characters and just the animation itself. So it makes me excited to see what they're going to do next. And honestly, if they make a Shrek 5, I say go for it. I would totally be down for a Shrek 5. If they can make it mature, just like what Puss in Boots 2 did, sign me up. Make a good Shrek film, please. Like, with good, like, because the last two Shrek movies and even the Puss in Boots 1, I was like, okay, they're fine. They exist. I want, like, good reinventions of a franchise. And that's what Puss in Boots did. It's like, I don't want to say a soft reboot, but it feels like a nice take. It's like, okay, let's do something different.
Yep.
Aren't they making a Shrek 5?
They are.
Yeah,
they're making Shrek 5. Hopefully it's in this style, honestly. I wouldn't mind seeing it in this animation style.
I think it needs to be in that animation style. Honestly, imagine Shrek fighting like that. Like, he just says, it's ogre time. Please. That's all I want.
Caitlin, do you have anything else to add?
Not particularly. It's in my top 40. This film's in my top 40 of all time. So,
oh, wow.
I don't know. Yeah, it's very good. if there's anything that stood out to me the most, I mean, I value comedy a lot in films, and I feel like this is like one of the funniest movies I've ever seen. If I were to critique it at all, this is not necessarily a critique, but it does feel like, I don't think there's such thing as like specifically children's movies or like kids' movies, but it does feel like formulaic in that way, where it feels like, oh yeah, this is a movie that's aimed for families and audience, like families and kids. But there's so much substance to the film, even if I think like, actually, no, I don't think that. There's a lot of substance to the film. And also alongside like the comedy and the absolutely phenomenal animation, I think that like, there's just so much to love about the film, and it will definitely not age quickly at all, even when DreamWorks continues to make films that look exactly like this.
Yeah, well said. I guess one more thing that I wanted to add before wrapping up, and it's echoing what you said, Blake. I think like DreamWorks as a company, I've never disliked DreamWorks, but they are, if I could describe them, at least like not recently, but like prior, it was very inconsistent. Like, they hit some straight up bangers. Like, I love the How to Train Your Dragon movies a lot. I love the Kung Fu Panda movies, but they've also, whenever they make a good film, they always seem to make like either a really, really mid film or one that's like outright garbage. But this is the first time, at least in my, like in my time as of living, I guess, where DreamWorks in a way almost one-upped Pixar. Not in terms of financial, but like in terms of quality storytelling. Like, I prefer Turning Red over Bad Guys, but like because of those two films, Bad Guys and Puss in Boots 2, it seems like they really went in the complete opposite direction, where it's like, okay, we're not going to try and replicate Pixar necessarily, but we're going to try and do our own thing to set us apart from Pixar and give audiences more of a reason to come to our films. And I think Puss in Boots 2 really, really did that. And even though it's not an original film, like, because a lot of times I want to see something that's original. I want to see something that's not, that I haven't seen before. Even though this is a sequel, they in a way did that because it's nothing like the first film. It's totally different, but it's better in that way because they improved upon it. They took massive risks. They changed up the style. They really cared about the characters. And I really, really appreciate that. And so I'm very, very excited to see what DreamWorks has going on in the future, which I honestly haven't felt in probably since I was a kid, honestly, because before this, I don't even remember the last DreamWorks movie I saw in theaters. It was probably How to Train Your Dragon 3. But yeah, it's just, this was fantastic. I think we've all kind of said that. So we could go into final thoughts. What is our consensus?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think I'm going to give this like an 8.5 or a 9 out of 10. I think it's one of the best anime movies out there. I mean, I'm not mad that Pinocchio won Best Anime Feature for Oscars this year because it was a great movie, but I think this was definitely close, the second place for me. It was such a great film. And honestly, I cannot wait to see more for like Shrek 5 and other DreamWorks properties because this was incredible.
I really like what you said about how this provides something different from Pixar rather than like trying to recreate something that they do. And also like, it just provides a for me personally, I like this film more than any Pixar film I've seen, like by quite a bit. I don't even know if I give a Pixar film like a perfect score for me, like me personally, but it's just it's just very impressive. I said it already, but it's in my top 40 of all time. So I think I hold it very highly, and I rate films based on like my experiences with them and like surrounding them too. And I think I've had a lot of good experiences surrounding like going to see this film and just the just how it resonates with me and how it relates to my life.
Yeah, excellent sequel. This, it had no right to be this good. I'll be totally honest. if you told me like a last year, be like, yeah, there's gonna be a Puss in Boots sequel and you're gonna love it, I would have been like, yeah, right. Like, stop lying. It's like, no, they did it. It's like, I can't believe they did it. And like, it's a lot of fun. It's super engaging, not afraid to go in dark directions. It's also appropriate for like people of all ages too. It's like kind of how I feel about Marcella Shell with Shoes On. It's just like, this isn't strictly a kid's film. It doesn't deserve to be labeled as just a kid's film. It's a family film. It's for everybody. And just because it's animated doesn't mean it's just like, oh yeah, it's going to be like, it's going to talk down to, it's going to infantilize just everything about it. It's like, no, this shows that animation can be done maturely, can be done engagingly for an older audience. So, and for that reason, I really, really like it. And I think if you haven't seen Puss in Boots, The Last Wish, check it out if you would like to, because it's great. I would give it an 8 out of 10, honestly. I think that's a fair score. So yeah. Awesome. So that concludes this episode of Bijou Banter. Tune in next week where we're going to have a special video game month because we're going to be talking about the Super Mario Brothers movie and Tetris, the biopic on Apple TV Plus. So until next time, I've been Matthew.
And I've been Blake.
Hey, Ben.
And we will see you all next time. Bye-bye.